This is Wednesday, November 9, we're here to do an oral history interview with Dr. John Romanek. There's John Cowling and myself, Richard Allen. Maybe each person say something so the transcriber can recognize voices.
All right, I'm John Romanek.
And I'm John Cowling.
Okay. What we do is we tape record it. My wife is a transcriptionist. Then we'll give you the transcription to proofread and edit as you see fit. Then it'll be four copies made, one for here, three copies actually here, Mill Race, Historical Archives, and the library. And the tape will eventually be duplicated and be in Mill Race and the library. But tape duplication comes later. I think the Prime Minister we have, that we know you had quite an involvement with Mayberry Sanatorium in your career, and maybe you could just give us a little bit of background on when you came to Northville and what you did and how you tied into Mayberry.
As I was driving up here, I was thinking, I moved here in December 1964. I was wondering where township offices were there, and I didn't have any business with township offices, but I had no idea where township offices were in 1964. But anyway, I came out here because I had just left a very well-paying job, a residency, $125 a month at Henry Ford Hospital. And I had three kids and a partner, and we had a business. And like all business start, now we had no money. So we went to Mayberry to look and see if they needed any money, and fortunately they did. And that started in 1964, and I was director of the children's building there from 64 to 69 when it closed. There's a whole lot of stories that go with it that might develop as we go along, but that's how I got introduced to Mayberry.
Okay, and you were your specialty is pediatrics?
Oh yes, that's all I took care of was okay. Children. Wait a minute, that's not all I took care of. I was, when I was on call, I took care of the whole institution. But my primary responsibilities was the health and welfare of the kids with tuberculosis over there, but it's important to remember right off that children with tuberculosis are not ill from their disease 99 9/10% of the time. I took care of their chicken pox, their colds, their measles, their mumps, their appendices, and all the other things that go wrong with people while we heal their tuberculosis.
Maybe you could tell us a little bit about some of the facilities around the site. And I know there's residents there with their, what kind of medical facilities were available.
Mayberry was a huge place compared to Northville. I mean, in relationship to Northville. I think there was a time where the population of the patient and employee population of Mayberry was comparable to Northville somewhere along the line. Mayberry opened in 1921. And over the years, it went up to nearly 1,000 beds. And it had 500 and a half employees, many of which lived on the grounds, but many communicated. I lived in a house. One of the beautiful parts of this job was I lived in houses on Beck Road. Those five houses on Beck Road were built by the Workmen's Progress Association, WPA. And it was a gorgeous place to live, just a gorgeous place to live. And the facilities they had, Mayberry had, it was a self-enclosed unit, I mean, they burned 160 carloads of coal a year to make electricity, wash their clothes, cook their food. They had their own fire system. That was a self-enclosed unit, primarily because society probably demanded it back in those days.
Now that included, you had a farm on the grounds, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
Did it include there?
Yes, we did. Had a farm, which is now the Mayberry Farm. And, yes, they grew various vegetables there. And when I was there, they didn't have a dairy farm. But they had various vegetables.
Didn't DeHoku also farm part of that land?
They did. Yes, they did.
I kind of recall DeHoku came all the way up to 8 Mile Road.
Yeah, they did. They'd come over to my garden. DeHoku would come over to my garden. It was really funny. I had a garden maybe 30 by 30, and they would bring a tractor over there with a 6-bottom plow.
We probably should say that DeHoku was the Detroit House of Corrections, which was down on 5 Mile Road.
I got a story about that. They were doing some farming over there. They were fooling around with the tractors a little bit, trying to give the guys a joyride, and they knocked a whole bunch of employees off trucks, wagons, onto asphalt. And of course they got this asphalt all ground up and doomed and so forth. And I'm a rookie, I think we were called over there to help them out. And everybody's not hurt seriously at all, just bleeding all over the place and scratched up. And I'm taking care of it. All these prisoners are promised to pay me in chicory. I had no idea what chicory was, none. So I finally went and asked one of the guards, I said, what's chicory? And he told me it was their tobacco they gave him on a weekly basis. I wanted to make sure I didn't know what chicory was.
Make sure it's not illegal.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure it wasn't illegal. But Mayberry was, now just to go back to Mayberry. When Mayberry was built, about 120 Detroiters were dying per 100,000 every year from TB. I mean, you think about the news media now.
Right.
I mean, the news media would have a field day on that.
Mm-hmm.
It went progressively down, but when it was built, because of that. And it had a great enough effect where in 69 it closed. It closed because of the new drugs, but that's how many people were dying from TB when Mayberry was built.
Were only Detroiters allowed to come into the hospital or to take them from elsewhere?
At first, back, but then they took them out from elsewhere. And we had prisoners over there, too. We had the state's prisoners over there, too. Yes.
Now, you were dealing with the younger ones. About what age range was that?
From infancy to 15. But they were primarily 4 and 5 years old.
And that was separated from the other
From the adult section, correct, yes.
What was the average length of stay for the children?
6 months. And in no way was it... We kept those kids over there to make sure they got 6 months of medicine. So that in 2006, when they are now 45 years old, and they are grandparents, they don't get TB and give it to their kids. That's why we kept them there. Now, prior to drugs, just let me give you an example of how this works. If you took 100 two-year-old kids in 1910 and you infected them with TB, 1 year later, 22 of them were dead. I mean, that you could write that on the wall. Nothing much happened. You still had 78 of them. Oh, my math right?
Yeah.
78 of them. And they, in adolescence, because of rapid growth and so forth, a few more died, maybe 6. So now you got 28 dead. The other 73, remember 1910, I know, no, not to us, it doesn't seem so long ago, but to a lot of people listening to this tape, when I said my 1910, I mean, you know, there must have been buffalo around. But it wasn't so long ago. And these people in 1910 would, of course, been almost 100 today. But let's assume they are alive. Well, they're going to get cancer or tuberculosis. And that inactive TB they've had, that's been doing, sitting there, and living a peaceful coexistence with his body, all of a sudden becomes active, and they infect another 10 of their great-grandkids. And that's the cycle that drugs broke.
What were the drugs they were using?
Isoniazid, which is a, see it on your cereal box, a close relative to it every day, a vitamin A. And the other one was PAS, called para-aminosalicylic acid. You say, well, that's a big name, until you know that aspirin is aminosalicylic acid, a brother to aspirin. Now, there were others, but those were the two major ones. But the thing about it is we took these kids and gave them drugs, and we essentially sterilized them. Wait a minute. We sterilized them from a tuberculosis germ point of view. So that they didn't grow up, get something else, and infect another crew. And we stopped the cycle from going on.
What percentage of the total population do you say the children were of the people who were at Mayberry? You know, you had adults in there also.
Yeah, well, there was, Mayberry had a capacity of 850. We generally had 100, 125 adults. So, approximately 10% of them were kids.
Okay.
How when they came there, I heard one gentleman say not too long ago that he was a family of one of the families that lived there. He wasn't a patient, but he wasn't allowed to play with the patients. Did you keep them separated from other people that are living there? You had a lot of employees lived right on the grounds, right?
Correct.
And this one gentleman, whether he was correct or not, said he grew up there, but he wasn't allowed to play with the kids. Were they segregated to keep the spread of the disease of locals or what? Is that, or did I hear wrong?
Keith Mueller has his stories wrong.
I have the story wrong. Okay.
All right, I heard him tell that story. And all I can tell you is that I can put it to you this way. I was a hell of a lot safer in Mayberry than I was at 12 Oaks. A hell of a lot. Because there is no way that I could get TB from an adult on drugs, and I don't know who's not on drugs at 12 Oaks. And kids, again, we're expanding this a little too far, kids are generally, on the average, most of the time, infrequently infectious. But they have a different kind of work. Tuberculosis in kids is primarily a disease that affects the brain, not causing cataracts. It's not a pulmonary disease. It doesn't cause holes in your lungs and spitting out blood and bacteria. It is not very infectious in kids, but that's a sort of complicated story.
That would be probably the fear of this kid's parents rather than reality.
Correct. His grandfather ran the tuberculosis division of Mayberry for years. Let's face it, fellas. Now everybody thinks that drugs saved the world from tuberculosis, and that's really a falsehood. Remember I told you that 120, 117 were dying? By the time drugs came along, that number was down to 45 per 100,000. Why? Better food, better sanitary conditions, better knowledge of how it spread. And then, that's 100% decrease.
You mentioned you lived in one of the houses at Mayberry. Are those the houses that are along Beck Road today that are now the park headquarters?
Yes.
Okay. Make sure that what the records say is right across from his house.
Right across my house, yes. It's scheduled to get knocked down. My house, the one I live in, is scheduled to get knocked down. But
yeah, that's the northerly one, I understand.
Most southern one.
Okay, well, the one on the north side, they're supposed to take down too.
Well, they're probably scheduling more than anything else.
Because that one, I understand, has been essentially abandoned in a state of deterioration.
Yeah. But I'll tell you, I got a lump in my throat as big as a pumpkin moving out of that house. We had a 4x4 kitchen, you know, with five kids in it, but we loved that house.
You could walk to work every day.
Well, I biked it some days.
Okay.
I was not an employee, I was an independent contractor. I was in private practice too. I just took care of the kids, but I was in private practice out Farmington also.
Okay.
Now, as you know, because you were there and part of it, they dedicated a little educational historic trail over there, which shows the location of the various facilities. It's hard to imagine now with it all gone, with that, but with the children's, weren't there cottages for the kids as well as the main place?
The children's story gets a little confused, and I'm not sure I can give you the straight one. Okay. But if you go in, you remember the gate at 7 Mile, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that 7 Mile gate was the main entrance. I mean, it started at 7 Mile and back, and it had a big arch. And allegedly Mayberry plowed it, and you went up that road, and then right over here on the right was a whole bunch of buildings with a whole lot of nursery rhyme characters on it that the Detroit Times would bring kids out there to try to prevent it from getting TB. They did not have TB. It was a summer camp right next to it was the children's building, right? It was called Flagpole Hill. That highest spike in Maryberry, 800 and some feet above sea level. That was where the kids were. Wait a minute, that was where the kids were before my time. That's where they had the kids in the school and so forth. The whole theory was keep them a couple miles away from the adults. All right. Now, I don't know what day this happened, but it was before my time. They moved the kids in what was called the men's annex. Should have brought the book to show you where that was, but I didn't.
We can't tape record the book.
Yeah, all right. But he moved it in to the annex, and that's where I worked, and that's where I took care of the kids. The children's building was a huge building. It was there. It was there when I worked there. I went through it. It was an abandoned building. But that little camp that the newspapers ran before the Depression. And apparently that's when it hit the dirt. Couldn't have been depressing because, or right around that time. They had kids out there, though, when members of the family became ill, they brought the kids out there. I guess charity fed them and kept them so they wouldn't get TB.
Didn't they kind of vaguely remember that one of the things they felt was that TB was getting out into the fresh air? Wasn't that part of it?
Well, that was certainly the theory before Mayberry was built.
Yeah, okay.
This was a guy by the name of Trudeau out of New York. That was the whole thing, the fresh air and sunshine. Mayberry was more on a bed rest. The whole theory of Mayberry was to try to stop the movement of lungs. If you try to stop the movement of lungs by laying the guy down, tell him not to do anything, and then you did various things to collapse his lung. Namely, put air in it, cut his ribs up so they flop down. I mean, these got very technical medical names, you know. But the whole theory was to collapse the lung, let it sit there for years and heal up. Actually, I never use that. When I teach about tuberculosis, and I do still teach physicians about, that wasn't that. Everybody calls it inactivity. I call it building a fence around the buggers. All you did was build a fence around. The higher the fence, the better. And that fence usually came down for when other illnesses struck. But the open air theory was not so much at Mayberry anymore.
You've been in the township for 40 plus years. Do you have any particular memories of how it's progressed, good or bad or otherwise?
Yeah, I was thinking coming down here, what I wanted to tell you. And I still hope this happens. I don't need it anymore, but I hope it happens. When we lived out at Mayberry, we had two kids, and then we finally ended up with five kids. And my wife would go to Breeders, and there was a lady there called B, and all I knew was she was B. I don't know what her last name was. But my wife would tell me that I gotta watch the kids, and she was going to Breeders, and she'd bring home this pile of clothes and try them on the kids at home, and then the ones she wanted to take back, she took back, and the ones she wanted to keep, she kept, and then she went down there and paid her. And this happened for years. I mean,
small town atmosphere.
It happened for years. I remember walking down Main Street one time, my mother-in-law died. And there was a few merchants opening up their stores. And of course the banks at that time, you know, back in 1965, you know, they opened noon at best. And I'm sort of being facetious, but the only problem was the plane was flying, I think, at 10 or something. And I'm going down Main Street. I need to buy a ticket to go to fly on this airplane. My mother-in-law died. Old Charlie Lapham's out there putting his clothes on the sidewalk. And I said, well, you know, the bank's open. I gotta buy an airplane ticket, and I don't have any money. I wonder if he still remembers this, because he just had come from the bank, I guess, because he had a pocket full of money. So he must have went over and got to the bank or somewhere to get a pocket full of money to fill up his cash register. He peels up and he says, how much money do you want? Now, I met this guy at best twice before that. And I don't remember how much money he gave me. Really, he obviously gave me enough for a ticket. I don't remember going back and paying him for a check, but that was really amazing. But when my wife told me that, you know, she brought all these clothes home before the kids to try. The other thing that I did, my wife used to go down when John Mack was. Remember when Mac Porter was in town?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when you have five kids, you need a station wagon. Nobody knows what a station wagon is anymore, but that was a big car. She'd go down, or I would go down, and we'd see a station wagon in the back there and say, well, you know, it looks pretty good. So I would call John Mac. That guy was staying in his office because I didn't get out at 6 o'clock. He stayed in his office 6:30, quarter to 7. I go down there, give him a check for a car, and drive off with the car. I mean, that was, I hope they still do that. I don't have any reason to check them, but I hope they still do it.
There's some that do, but there's some that don't.
But I was trying to think of where township offices were in 64.
One time they used to be in town, and I think there was a building, if I recall, it's where City Hall is today, or close to it. The township and the city, I think, shared
the
building.
They shared that.
They were in the church building.
Okay.
For a while. They were over on Franklin Road where the Meadsville School is. There was an old one-room schoolhouse that was the township. I don't know the dates, but I know they were in both of those two places. So it's probably the one in town.
I think they were still in town. We came over shortly after that. They moved down to the Child Development Center.
And the church is now at the church is now at the historical building.
Yeah.
It was Township Hall for a while.
The other thing that I thought about is also, I drive up my driveway now at 8:30 in the morning, and I can go through three religions in a hurry. You know, these kind people not letting you drive out of my driveway won't let me get on the back road. I remember when Beck Road was closed from Monday to Wednesday with a snowstorm, and nobody knew the difference. There's no problem. And now I'd sort of like to close it from Monday to Thursday, just see what would happen.
It was a dirt road. A few years ago, relatively few years ago.
I have neighbors who complain about the noise from Beck, and I look at them and says, when we moved here at 5:30 in the morning during the summertime, you heard the double bottom gravel trucks going down the road to Thompson Gravel Pit, hitting every pothole on Beck Road,
and
clanging and banging down the road.
You could hear them start at the 80 yard, too.
So don't tell me how noisy Beck Road is to hear some double bottoms banging down the road.
I know in 1966 we had a storm that closed that road from Monday to Thursday. Just didn't bother anybody. And, I can't even get out of my driveway now.
The problem is it's the only connector between two freeways.
Yeah, right. And not at the gut. M14 project finished off. It's the only connection
between Haggerty Road and Pontiac Trail. It's the only north-south highway that goes through.
Yeah, all the rest of them don't have to stop.
Yeah, I don't use Beck Road in rush hour. I stay. So what's it when I go out there?
Give me another question. I'm going to run out of. Ad lib here.
when you're dealing with a bunch of, like you said, 5, 6, 7 years old, my experience as a parent is that they're a pretty peppy bunch. Did you have problems keeping them from running around and dancing and playing and getting into trouble, or were they pretty good?
Okay, John, I suppose you were in the newspaper business, and therefore you were making a living, and you didn't, you were just like I am, you did not raise your kids. By that I mean, you know, you gave them the paternal supervision that society demanded at that time. But I'm talking about everyday raising them, you know. It's the same way at Mayberry. I would walk in there like you did at home, you know, in the morning and night. But the nurses and the teachers and everybody else took care of the kids. So I really can't answer your question, honestly. You know, I really can't. I can only remember one time going over there for discipline reasons. One time. And that is when the kids got the racial thing going. Among the employees. You know, Mrs. So-and-so said something about you. Oh. All right. As you know, it got to the point where it was, where Mrs. So-and-so wanted an explanation. Anyway, that's about it. But as far as discipline, no, I had no part of that. My primary responsibility was the medical care. So I would go over there in the morning and I would see all the children who were ill, you know, and if you had 100 kids, this time of the year or March, 10 of them had a fever. So you had to check them and see what's wrong with them. Excuse me. Did the nurses sort of like steer you to kids that weren't feeling good, or did they?
Oh yeah.
They kept a real hospital record on them. Oh yes. In other words, I would get a write-up on each child. Each child had a write-up every day. In other words, temperature and medicine and so forth. And did I look at that chart? I don't remember looking at it too much. I would walk in there and they'd tell me all of, you know, who needs to be seen and so forth. We would do gastrics on them. In other words, in adults you collect sputum, they spit. In kids, you can't get them to spit. They'll swallow these organs if they're producing any. So you go down to their stomach in the morning, not every morning, but once every 2 months. And you aspirate their stomach in the morning to see if you can grow any organisms that they swallow through the night. That wasn't a very nice procedure. They didn't like that.
I wouldn't like that.
They didn't like that. But I was awful good at it, though. I got awful good at it, where I could put a tube in them with almost, at least I thought I was awful good at it. And then I'd do the x-rays. The other thing was talking to parents. I would talk to parents when they would call, certainly, but also once a month see them in person and report on them how their child was doing. Oh, I know one incident I forgot to tell you about. Remember I told you about the fact that TB stays arrested, and everybody's, first of all, back in 1800s, they thought tuberculosis and what was known as consumption were two different diseases. They had, in other words, they had the idea that once you got TB, you had this progressive disease. They didn't know it went back all the way here to childhood. Like, for example, we have a wonderful analogy. You had chicken pox as a child, you still have chicken pox in you, and if you haven't had it already, if you live long enough, you will get shingles, all right? And that's just nothing more than you've been living in peaceful coexistence with chicken pox in this particular spot. Your immune system has been keeping the corral. And for some reason, your immune system falls down on the job and some of them get out. Well, this lady was taking care of the Hansel and Gretel Nursery School in Garden City. And another thing that'll let your immune system drop is medicine, one of which is steroids. So she was getting this medicine for steroids and working in this nursery school, and she developed active tuberculosis, which was very silent because of her steroids, and she infected about 28 kids. Well, I had a boss at Weber. His name was Dr. Howard. He didn't say much, but damn, he was smart. We would, on a weekly basis, we'd have probably 10 kids come in. We'd have to look at their films and so forth and see how extensive their disease was. And he flipped these. First of all, we're dealing with white kids. Now, I can tell you, if you put up a string of x-rays, I can tell you which ones are the African-American x-rays and which ones are the white ones, because the white race has a much better ability to control tuberculosis than the black race kid does. And I can just tell by x-ray looking at which ones are the blacks, which ones are the whites, because of the amount of tissue reaction. Well, anyway, my boss said, these are white kids. Why is your disease so extensive? And I didn't think anything about it. That was week one. And apparently the word got out at the school and they went and tested everybody. And then week two hit. And boy, we got another 10 or 15. Same thing. And the name was Dr. Howard. He said, boy, whoever found you is pretty sharp. And it was a guy who, routine pediatrician, just did a skin test on this kid who just suspected it and found it positive, and then they checked it all out and found it related back to this employee at the Hansel and Gretel Nursery School. And I had about 28 of those kids out there. All did well. None of them had anything bad, wrong to them, but it got me on Huntley Brinkley, and that was a 7 o'clock news, NBC, 1960. it again demonstrates how this cycle would work. You know, an adult would break down, all these kids get infected, Now, if you didn't have drugs, now you've got 28 kids who for the rest of their life are a walking bomb. And unless you give medicine, it'll diffuse the bomb.
Now, what was the polio vaccines?
61.
And,
just a second. 60.
You'd say two or three, because it seemed to be
two or three. Because
we got married in 62, and I remember what I took the sugar cube after. Took it, so it had to be after 62.
Yeah.
So it was that sort of the beginning of the end for Mayberry when the vaccines became.
You're talking polio. This is TB.
Oh, TB. I'm sorry. I got the. Okay. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
Cancel that remark.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me, I wish I'd have brought this book.
Okay, I got the wrong track.
John, I wish I'd have brought this book. It's called the Mayberry Manual, because these were papers written on Seven Mile and Mayberry's End by doctors. And you ought to see the way these guys are writing. First of all, this manual that I'm talking is written in 1940. Nobody wants it, and they're writing these articles in this magazine, nobody wants to mention the war that's coming up, but you can read between the lines if you know any history and know that they're reading. They mentioned Hitler once, but the guy says, a guy worked there, his name was DeGrief. The guy that found TB, his name was Koch. 1882, he saw it under the microscope. And at that time, if you implied the source of a disease was anything other than the Almighty's wrath, you were in trouble. Most diseases was God getting even with you. Now this guy said, this is baloney. Yeah, I got the buggers right here. Right underneath the mic. So he was scoring something fierce. Well, anyway, this guy over at Mayberry says, this is 1940 now. He's writing not many years after that, 1882, 1940, 60-something years. He said, there's somebody in this big world that's sitting around, and he's going to come up with a vaccine. We're still talking vaccine, we're not talking drugs. He's going to come up with a vaccine, and I hope, and I'm almost certain, he won't be scorned at all if he finds a solution to this problem. And it's amazing insight of, when you know a little bit of history, read that, how that works, you know, kind of the statement.
This book you referred to, if you ever feel a need to put it in history, I'm sure the Northville Historical Society would love to add it to their archives.
Well, the answer is, somebody's going to get it now. I think they have one.
Do they may. I don't know. I have to put a plug in for the archives or I'll get shot.
One last thing. The gentleman whose name is on the place, Mr. Mayberry, who worked very hard at doing. I understand that he died of TB there at the hospital. Do you know anything about that? That'd be in the 30s. It'd be a long time before you were there.
No, but I heard a lot about it. It's one of those stories who, when you know how things progress, you just wonder how valid they are. Number one, Mayberry worked for Cousins. James Cousins was the mayor. He's one of the mayors that Mayberry worked for. And he was in real estate, and he apparently used to be wealthy. And he's one of those dollar guys, you know. He's working for the city for a buck. He allegedly dies in the building. It was called Whipple Estates. It's not the farm. It is not the house where the farm is now. The state took over. They knocked that building down. It's right across, when you go into the entrance of the park from 8 Mile Road, it's right across the road from the other set of buildings that are north of the 8 Mile. There's a little house. And he allegedly died there. Now, I don't know if he died from tuberculosis. I doubt it. But wait a minute, I know how the story gets started, me saying I doubt it. Write it down here. The answer is, I personally question the TV story very much. I think it was fabricated history.
Those things do.
They have their own life.
Yeah. Yes, they gather moss.
But I had heard that, talked to somebody some years ago.
There's a story that he allegedly hooked up a team of horses and with a plowed the furrow that which the roads were being built on. Seems plausible. Whether it happened or not, I don't know. But it seems plausible. The thing about it is, you can go to that children's garden. There's a big pine tree right in front of me. My kids introduced me to this. You can crawl up that pine tree, not on a day like today, but most days, and you can see downtown Detroit's big flag. Really well.
I know that I was talking to George McCarthy, who's head of the Friends of Mayberry. I kind of recall when they first opened up the trail where the horse stable was that goes over the dam, that there used to be some springs down there just short of that pond. I kind of recall water coming out of the ground.
Sure was. Yeah. That's where we got our water from for those houses.
Okay. Yeah, because George wasn't aware of that. I think it's something tried. The last time I looked, I could hardly see it in there.
No, it got buried under that lake.
It did it? Okay.
Yeah.
I remember seeing water on the ground in there.
Got buried under the lake. All right.
I've got a lot of questions, sir.
No, it's...
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you.